Today on the Music City Audible, we are covering underrated but important storylines coming out of Titans training camp. We got four big topics, the running backs, the tackles, and other stuff like that. So, let's get to it! Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast presented by Prize Picks. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me, as always, I can go back to saying as always now, Justin, for the foreseeable future, my co-host, the managing editor of Titansize.com, publisher for NFL Draft on SI, Justin Mello. Justin, how you doing today?
Doing well. My second show back in the saddle here. Excited to be talking Titans football out of training camp. They had an open practice to the fan base on Monday. They've added another open practice to the schedule tomorrow on Wednesday. I believe they are off today or behind closed doors. So we're sitting here talking about some of the storylines that have developed since the first preseason game against San Francisco about 4 or 5 days ago. We got some really interesting things to cover and talk about today.
Yeah, I mean, I would say some of these storylines maybe go back even further than that, especially particularly the first one I'm going to bring up. And the others, like you said, have emerged over the last week or so. And I'm really excited to talk about these things because I feel like they're not getting enough coverage. We're spending so much time on how's Cam Ward look? Why did he suck on Thursday night? Why do the Titans have the worst secondary in the NFL now? Like, those are the things that have been focused on, and I want to like take it in a new direction. So let's talk about first up on our docket today, J.C. Latham, and more than just J.C. Latham, J.C. Latham and Jeffrey Simmons. J.C. Latham spoke at the podium yesterday. I got a quote I'm going to play from that. Jeffrey Simmons spoke about J.C. Latham on August 7th. Got a quote I'm going to play about that too. To me, the overarching story here is J.C. Latham appears poised for, finally, that breakout season that we've been waiting, solidifying himself as the starting right tackle. Robert Saleh spoke about Latham yesterday. He's mentioned it a few times about how easy it is for Latham to put on weight, and not just weight, but put on muscle and find that balance between power and foot speed. And Latham's been working really hard over this entire offseason. He showed out really well in the preseason game on Thursday night. He was the Titans' highest graded offensive player, according to PFF, on Thursday night, overall offense grade. He's always been a mauler in the run game. Sometimes he doesn't play all the way through the whistle. He doesn't finish. He doesn't show that like full effort consistently. We're starting to see that be a little bit better, we hope, coming into this season. And overall, like as a pass blocker, I think he continues to get better. Says he has really good communication with Fernando Carmona. The Titans running right on Thursday night looked incredible. Running left didn't look bad either. The run game was working on Thursday night. But I also want to like dive into the relationship that's forming between J.C. Latham and Jeffrey Simmons. But first, just like your thoughts on a J.C. Latham potential breakout season and how important that is for the roster construction of this team going forward.
Oh, for so many reasons, right? Number one, I'm here for it. First round pick, super talented, big, looks the part, and has occasionally, as I've constantly said on this show, played high level football for the Titans occasionally. It's the inconsistencies, the mental errors, an injury last year, a couple of things that have sort of gotten in his way from him being good all the time, right? But how big is it? Number one, I mean, they need more answers on the offensive line because going into the year, they've probably got more questions than that. We're wondering about the center. We're wondering about the right guard. Is Dan Moore who we think he is? And then you add J.C. Latham to that. That would be 4 or 5 spots that have question marks. So just eliminating one of those to start would be very beneficiary. But the other thing, when I think about, you know, looking forward, moving ahead, is like, we know that Dan Moore is probably not the future left tackle, right? He's not the franchise left tackle in 2027, 2028. Certainly probably not 2028, right? They could get out of it this year. Maybe he gets one more year, he plays well. But I don't think he's here in 2028. I think that's safe to say. It'd be a heck of a lot helpful if they've only got to replace one tackle in the next 2 years as opposed to two. What did you say yesterday? Premium tackles, they fly off the board. Those are hard to get. Right? You got to draft one. It's already a bit of a tall task, right? You typically need a top 10 pick, top 15 pick to get a guy. We've seen, you know, Tristan Wirfs, like all these guys have been drafted highly. Andrew Thomas, so many of them have been drafted highly over these last 5, 6 years who are franchise tackles. That's typically where you need to draft them. tough to do that twice. You want to take him in back-to-back drafts, then, you know, everyone complains they're only picking line. Like, there's just so much you need to eliminate that you'd like to eliminate, you know, off your to-do list, if you will, if J.C. Latham takes a step forward we think he's capable of taking.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, everyone would agree with that. It's obvious how helpful it is to have one of those spots solidified. And like you said, and like I guess like I said that you said, they do fly off the board. And like free agent tackles, Dan Moore is the best you get at free agency at tackle. I mean, occasionally, I guess a guy like Orlando Brown gets moved or Laremy Tunsil gets traded. But I guess Laremy Tunsil's been traded multiple times. Huh? But that's a rare instance. And then even then, if you are trading for a guy, you're giving up big capital for it. Trent Williams going to the Niners, like that was a crazy situation in Washington. And then Tunsil's also had his share of, like, I want to say, like, character locker room issues. Like, there was a big story out of Houston that trading Tunsil was going to be great for the chemistry of the offensive line. Like, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but that's how you end up with a top tackle outside the draft. Even then, you got to give up a draft pick. So yeah, it's huge if J.C. Latham is the guy. And on the J.C. Latham Jeffrey Simmons relationship here, I remember a couple of years ago, and you probably remember this, Justin, how Jeffrey Simmons would speak about Latham at the podium, like, this is my guy on the other side of the ball. It's going to, like, lead that unit. Like, me and him are the young guys who are highly drafted players that need to step up and be those leaders on both sides of the ball. Jeffrey Simmons on defense, J.C. Latham on offense. They fought in practice about 2 weeks ago now. I believe it was like August 5th or 6th. It was in that week, sometime one of those days. Jeffrey Simmons threw a punch at JC. Now JC had come in to break up a fight that was happening between Jeffrey Simmons and somebody else. I think it was
Austin Schlotman, I think.
Yeah, right. So it wasn't even like started between them, but JC took the punch from Jeffrey Simmons. And there was a lot made of this. I remember somebody going out on Twitter and saying that his theory is that Jeffrey Simmons actually hates J.C. Latham, like actually can't stand him, I believe were the exact words used. And I'm sitting here going, like, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but we don't know what either way based on a training camp fight. Like, that doesn't mean he hates him. Like, let's be real here. Well, I don't have to speculate. You don't have to speculate. None of us have to speculate because both of these guys have spoken about their relationship in recent press conferences and not just given like typical standard coach speak, player speak, whatever. He's my teammate and I support him type of answers. Like, no, these guys gave thoughtful, detailed responses. And I really appreciate both of them taking the time to explain the situation at the podium. Jeffrey Simmons talked for over a minute and a half. J.C. Latham talked for over 2 minutes about his relationship with Jeffrey Simmons. We're going to play both clips now, more or less back to back. Maybe we'll talk in between them, but let's go back to August 7th when Jeffrey Simmons was asked about throwing a punch at J.C. Latham and what's going through his mind and what's the relationship with J.C. like.
I mean, I push everybody. I think at the end of the day, my actions, I should say, wasn't appropriate with the taking a punch and swinging a punch. But at the end of the day, man, I'm a competitive guy. When we talking about the game of football, especially in the trenches, I think sometimes people on the outside can blow things up. I see the things. I see, you know, my family, like, oh, you. Listen, I'm when I play this game, I'm passionate. Everything I got, I leave it on the football field. I mean, that's all I know. I know the game of football. When I touch that field, practice, game, I don't care. I like to play fast. I like to play violent. I like to compete. And so when I attack the field, it's nothing against JC. It's nothing against at the end of the day, like I just said earlier, we are in this thing together. I'm trying to get him better. He's trying to get me better. Yes, temper flare. And like I go back to taking accountability, to taking the swing at JC. But at the end of the day, it's no beef. My job is to continue to get JC better. His job to continue to get me better. Same thing today. We talked smack. Me and JC had a day in there, 2 hour talk the other day, just talking, like, talking football, talking off the field things. Like, that's what the game about. And of course, you guys didn't know what without me saying, me and JC had a long talk. You guys don't know that. It's just, Jeff Simmons got a hot head, this and that. It's the game of football. Things happen at practice, throwing a punch, not appropriate, of course, but at the end of the day, no, it's no personal beef, none of that. We're here to continue to get each other better.
Man, these two guys had a 2 hour conversation the other day. You don't do that with somebody you hate or can't stand. You don't get on the phone and talk to them for 2 hours about life, about off the field stuff, about football. I'd love to know more about what they spoke about, Justin, wouldn't you? Well, guess what? J.C. Latham told us what they spoke about. So let's take a listen you know, grab a coffee, maybe grab some popcorn, sit down. This is a long clip, probably the longest clip we've ever played on the Music City Audible podcast, which goes back quite a ways. But here's JC Latham talking about his relationship with Jeff, the conversation they had, making each other better. Listen, take a listen to JC.
Yeah, Coach felt that I owed him an apology for just going up to him, trying to basically get him off Schlotty. And I also felt that, you know, it was a time for, we had to talk my rookie year. I can't remember what week it was. It was on the tail end of the year, though. And I was basically, we were basically trying to get on the same page. It's like, you know, he's amazing, obviously. And I wanted to be the guy that challenged him, that made myself better going against him every single day. And, you know, sometimes that a guy like him, people kind of see him as, you know, this amazing player that they don't, look at it as a challenge more than an opportunity. So, you know, and I want to be blessed with the opportunity to go against him every single day. And we had that talk, and unfortunately, you know, it seems like so long ago, but, you know, just getting hurt last year, I felt like I didn't have that chance as much. I missed a few weeks in training camp, a few weeks in the season. So, you know, we didn't have that rhythm that we'd like to have. So, you know, I also wanted to talk to him about, like, hey, like, let's just establish ourselves. You know, we pride ourselves on being fast and violent and being physical. So, you know, we're just talking about everything on how we both can do better, how I can do better, how I can receive leadership better, how I can be a better leader myself for, you know, our group. And, you know, part of being a leader is being a good follower, a great follower. So how I can do that as well, understanding that, you know, Jeff and Tajay gets into it all the time, but, you know, they're like best friends. And, you know, we were talking and he was like, yeah, like, you got to understand, like, Jeff's always going to pick on Tajay. Tajay's always going to pick on Jeff, right? And we were getting to the point where it was like, hey, okay, like, we're not going to stand for it. Even if you guys are best friends, we got to have a standard for ourselves, you know? And he said that's what he wants to see out of an O-line. He wants to see the guys, you know, sticking up for each other. He wants to see the guys going to fight for each other because he's showing, you know, checking guys' temperature, seeing if they got backbone or not, you know what I mean? So just getting on the same page as that, understand that nothing was personal at all with anything that happened. Just understanding, like, that's just how, you know, the game gets played. You play with a high tension and a high emotion. So at the end of the day, if you're going to defend your brother, sometimes you're going against your own teammate and doing so. So
I love everything about this answer, Justin. I love the fact that this really, we started to see it last year almost out of necessity because Brian Callahan was such a terrible coach and then got fired after 6 games. That this is a player-led locker room. The leadership emerging from the young players in this locker room, and not just the young players, obviously Jeffrey Simmons is a vet. He's not a young player. But JC Latham in his third year definitely qualifies as a young player. The idea that they know they have to be player-led. Like, yeah, the coach is going to do everything the coach can, and you hope that this coaching staff is the right one to lead this team for many years to come. But a lot of the improvement, a lot of the culture, a lot of that stuff has to be set by the players in the locker room. And JC Latham just being aware enough of that to go to the vet, who is the face of the franchise right now, and say, how can I be a better leader? How can I lead my group better? And I think actually earning respect from Jeffrey Simmons in this fight that happened a couple of weeks ago at practice, because showing that, yeah, we're going to have a backbone. We're going to stand up for our brothers on our side of the ball, even if it means going against our teammates. I think there's been some concern from Titans fans over the last couple of years that, like, the offensive line wasn't that fiery. They weren't doing the Taylor Lewan to Richard Sherman thing from however many years ago when the Titans played the Seahawks and Mariota took that hit on the sideline and Lewan's in Sherman's face, like, telling him he's going to kill his family, or who the heck knows what Taylor Lewan would say to somebody like that. But the fact that JC Latham's like, it's time for me to step up and be that leader. I think the recognition is there. They both mentioned, like, there's nothing personal. There's no personal beef here. They just want to be good. This team's been so bad for so long. They're tired of that. And they're realizing what steps they need to take to correct that from a player leadership perspective. So I don't know. I loved this answer from JC yesterday. So I wanted to talk about it and spend some time with it on the pod today. I just think that they're all heading in the right direction. And this is exactly like what I would hope to see after a training camp fight, is that it actually brought them closer together and it gave them all more respect for each other. You know what I mean?
You took the words out of my mouth because you took part of your answer in a direction that I didn't think you were going to take it in. And I'm upset that you stole my point.
My bad.
This offensive line, I think a big issue last year was a lack of toughness. Yeah. I even good players like, you know, Dan Moore, Peter Skoronski is one of the best left guards in the NFL. He's not a, you know, violent, physical tone setter. And you don't need to be. He's just the highest paid guard ever without that, right? But I think it's important to have some of it. And I don't think they had any of it. I mean that collectively, to have some of it. I don't think they had any of it. I don't think that's Dan Moore. I don't think that's Skoronski. I don't think that's Lloyd Cushenberry, the starting center last year. I don't particularly think it was Kevin Zeitler either. So J.C. Latham, to me, is the one who kind of exudes it the most, in my opinion, out of anyone on this line. Now, you're going to have some new guys. I think Fernando Carmona might exude that this year based on his history. And we're still getting to know Austin Floatman, right? So we'll see. But I think that was an issue last year. And the reason I bring that up, it came to mind when J.C. Latham answers that question and he says, like, we don't care. We know that him and Tajay are super close, and the buddy-buddy banter that you can get away with when you're, you know, you can say whatever to me, I can say whatever to you, no one gets offended because we're super close. But as offensive linemen, as an offense, we have to have a standard. We, you know, someone else on the D-line, someone else on the defense might not realize that. We don't want anyone to lose respect for our side of the ball, for our unit, think that we're not capable of sticking up and standing up for ourselves and our quarterback and our, in this case, our running back and Tajay Spears. So that sort of came to mind for me, because I don't think they played last year with enough toughness or with enough of a rough edge, if you will. And I think it's important that you exude that, and you got to do it from the beginning. It's got to start now. Seems like they're working their way towards that. After our first break, second topic on the docket, running back workload, Tony Pollard, Tajay Spears, some really interesting conversations to be had after this short break.
Football is back. The preseason is here, and Prize Picks, Justin, is a great way to make daily fantasy lineups and player projections more exciting, because there's no better place to run your game during the entire preseason. And once the regular season gets here, I mean, football is the best time of year. No better place to do it than Prize Picks, America's number one sports picks app.
We've just watched week one of the preseason, and we've got some exciting rookies all over the league. Carnell Tate in Tennessee, Jeremiah Love in Arizona. All 32 teams are excited to get started on the biggest football season yet. Head over to Prize Picks and make a lineup with player stats, pick game winners, spreads, or totals, and combine your picks into one fun lineup. All on Prize Picks, now available in all 50 states, including California, Texas, Georgia, and Florida.
That's right, Justin. The preseason action is big, but there's season-long action on Prize Picks, which, I don't know about you, I love doing season-long action myself. It gives me something to track throughout the whole year. And I told you all yesterday, but I've got three picks that I love. I'm taking Tony Pollard to go with more than 5 touchdowns rushing, Cam Ward more than 18.5 touchdowns passing, and Jackson Dart to throw less than 3,149.5 passing yards. Again, this is all play on health. I think that Tony Pollard and Cam Ward, if they stay healthy, they're both going with more touchdowns than they're projected for. And if Jackson Dart, I don't think Jackson Dart will stay healthy. So I think I'm going with less passing yards for him. Justin, Prize Picks has it all, though. It's not just these players. You can make any projection lineup you want.
As of now, download the app today and use code CLNS to get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. That's right. Download the Prize Pick apps today and use code CLNS to get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, America's number one sports picks app.
You know that 6 p.m. moment where dinner's supposed to happen, but there's nothing in the fridge? That used to be every Tuesday of my life. But now, I keep the freezer stocked with Omaha Steaks. Tender steaks, flavorful burgers, even seafood, chicken, sides, not just steak. All delivered right to my door. Arrives frozen and ready to go. Yes, frozen delivery can be that good with Omaha Steaks. Because it's steakhouse quality without steakhouse prices. I grilled the ribeye burgers last weekend. They were beefy, juicy, and actually these burgers tasted like a steak. Because it is steak, ground from real cuts. If you've never tried Omaha Steaks, start with the Burger Perfection Flight. Comes with 20 premium steak burgers from 5 distinct cuts, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, you can get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. It's football season, Justin, the best time of year to make sports bets as far as I'm concerned. And whether you've been betting your whole life or just trying to get into it this season, MyBookie is the best way to place your bets.
My favorite part about MyBookie, you don't need to be an expert. They have NFL lines every week, every game. Find your sweet spot, place your bets, and make betting fun again.
Yeah, Justin, and my favorite part about MyBookie, I can place my bets wherever I am, wherever I want to, before the game kicks off. Like, it doesn't matter where I am. MyBookie.com is available, and so I'll be playing there all season long.
And guess what? If you're new to MyBookie, the Music City Audible has you covered. The Bet Back bonus gives you protection on your first play. Sign up with our promo code MCA, opt into the Bet Back bonus, and take your first shot with a safety net.
Yeah, that's right, Justin. If your first wager loses, you get it right back. No questions asked. Make the most of football season. Make all the action as important as you possibly can. Get in now. Cash in on the season with MyBookie. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. But remember, Audible Army, always bet responsibly. Never gamble more than you can afford to lose. MyBookie! This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You've heard us talk about BetterHelp for the past month or so now, but I don't know that we've ever actually talked about how much people love this service when they use it. You can check it out yourself at betterhelp.com/reviews to see amazing customer reviews in real time. And these reviews are updated every day, with hundreds of people saying how much they love BetterHelp and how helpful it's been to them. Please visit betterhelp.com/reviews to see for yourself. BetterHelp has an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on over 1.7 million client session reviews. The feedback from people who have actually used the service speaks for itself. BetterHelp therapists have at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of hands-on experience. They also hold all required education, training, and certifications across a range of mental health specialties. BetterHelp makes it easy to get started. Just answer a few questions, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, and switch therapists at any time if it's not the right fit. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. All right, welcome back. Justin, you have our next underrated training camp storyline that matters for Titans training camp. What do you want to talk about here?
I want to talk about two underrated players, Graver, who I think are trending in the right direction, an interesting direction, especially after the first preseason game. Offensive tackle Brandon Crenshaw Dixon and safety Eric Hallett, the second, is how he's listed on the Titans roster page. Starting off with Crenshaw Dixon, he was a lot better than Austin Deculus was in that game against the 49ers as far as backup tackles go. Easton Freeze, A to Z Sports, reported that at Monday's practice, he seemingly worked higher up the pecking order and the depth chart than he had been previously, including a lot of reps at left tackle. They kind of made it sound like he was splitting some reps with Dan Moore, even with the first string offense. Now, I'm not going to get ahead of myself and say there's a competition going between Dan Moore and Brandon Crenshaw Dixon, but the fact that he's working higher up the order tells me, and promptly, appropriate reaction to what we saw in that first preseason game, maybe he's being promoted. Maybe Austin Deculus is being demoted. That would certainly be warranted based on how they both performed in week one of the exhibition. Been saying it all summer long, both you and I have. This is a serious issue at swing tackle. The Titans do not have a solution, or we don't think they do. We both really disliked the Austin Deculus move. So far, we've been proven right. He's been almost nothing short of a disaster, both at practice and in his first preseason game. Gave up 2 sacks on 10 pass blocking snaps, according to Pro Football Focus, against backups against the 49ers. He had a 19 overall grade in pass pro, according to PFF. We mentioned that yesterday. But interesting that, you know, BCD moving up the pecking order. I've got an article about it coming tomorrow on Titan Sized. I'll maybe give you a chance to respond to that before I move on to my other subject, who I already teased. Well, I've got another article on. I already dropped by the time this comes out. We had an early afternoon article on Eric Hallett on Titan Size. But first, you on Crenshaw Dixon.
Yeah, a little twofer here. We said there are four big storylines. This is two of them in one. But Brendan Crenshaw Dixon is going to be the swing tackle as of this recording, I think. And I think Austin Stanley even mentioned in that piece he wrote for A to Z Sports yesterday that he feels like they're testing him to see if an injury does happen at tackle, can we throw this guy in with the ones and not really miss a beat? And look, this is kind of the UDFA development story that you're looking for, especially after yesterday's conversation about the UDFA classes that Mike Borgonzi had. Another point on that, by the way, and I think Roster Grids maybe mentioned this in a somebody mentioned this in a comment that maybe these UDFA classes the last 2 years have been weaker because the draft classes have been shallower as we've been finally ending that like COVID extra eligibility, people going back to school for NIL stuff, and that'll all catch up eventually. But we've had a weird few years with the COVID classes and guys staying in school longer and stuff. So that could have something to do with it. But Crenshaw Dixon appears to be right now a UDFA hit. I'd be shocked if he doesn't make the roster. Like it's, I would say he's a lock for the roster at this point. He is right now the swing tackle. And yeah, test him. I definitely think this is different from Carmona getting first team reps. Like even Sala mentioned yesterday, again, talked more about Carmona. Like Carmona's getting first team reps because he's going to be the starter. Crenshaw Dixon getting first team reps in practice is about seeing if he can handle the swing test. Yes, exactly. Stress test. Because if he can't, we know Austin Deculus can't. We've learned that much over the last 2 or 3 weeks. We know that that's not happening. But can Crenshaw Dixon handle the job? Because if he can't either, they got to go get a swing tackle. And the swing tackle market is starting to dry up. Somebody signed a swing tackle this morning. I can't remember what team or what player, but like a mid-level, low-level tackle. Nobody, you never heard of him probably, but he's the type of guy that like you might be like one day the notification might come in. The Titans have signed a guy like this to come compete at swing tackle. If Crenshaw Dixon can hold it down, then they don't need to do that. I still would like them to for like insurance and depth purposes. They don't really seem keen on doing it. I've been saying for months I want them to sign a swing tackle. I don't know if they're going to. But if Crenshaw Dixon can be a swing tackle and they feel confident in him, then maybe you don't have to go get somebody else. So it would be a massive development. And again, underrated but highly important storyline coming out of Titans training camp.
For all the crap I gave on yesterday's show about the UDFAs, if he does successfully establish himself as the number three and the top swing tackle on the team, it would be one heck of a long-term storytelling about how to properly evaluate and develop a UDFA. Remember, when they signed him last year, they liked him. They immediately identified him as a long-term developmental option. I wrote an article on it last year. I still reference it because I thought it was so interesting. They kept him on the 53-man roster to avoid exposing him to waivers. That's how confident they were in his long-term potential. Now, they eventually, I think, cut him and put him on the practice squad, but they purposely did it at a time where they thought they could sneak him through as opposed to the period where everyone's claiming a bunch of guys because cut-down day just happened. They did that strategically. It worked to their benefit. This was always the plan 12 months ago, right? Like, we think he can be a guy that is playable for us at some point. And they're you know, the early signs are positive, but they're still finding out, as you said. Shout out to Zach Lyons on Eric Hallett. He had tweeted on how he played the second most snaps at nickel corner in the preseason game behind your obvious starter in Marcus Harris. I believe it was 20 snaps for Eric Hallett as a nickel corner. He even played 5, Zach pointed out, as a linebacker. So there might be some intriguing versatility, flexibility there. We talk a lot about that battle for that fourth safety spot, probably more than we should. We're nerds. We've had a hard time figuring out who that might be. Well, maybe it's starting to trend towards Eric Hallett. You know, he got a lot of work in that preseason game. I've talked a lot about how they don't seem to have a natural backup to Marcus Harris. Well, it might be Eric Hallett because, you know, the other nickel corner on the team is UDFA Jalen McMurray, who I know on good account has been getting third team reps at nickel corner. I'm not going to say for sure who's getting second team reps at nickel, but it sure sounds like it's Eric Hallett because that's what happened in the preseason game. He seized the opportunity, played well in that game. Interesting guy to monitor.
I don't know if this matters at all. It's always hard to tell what matters, if anything matters.
Well, everything matters.
Okay. But does anything actually matter?
Well, everything matters.
Okay, but my point is, Kedrain Callaghan is listed on the Titans' unofficial depth chart as Marcus Harris's backup. Do you think that he is the backup nickel? Do you think it's Eric Hallett because of the usage we've seen? Like, what are you weighing more importantly here? The depth chart that doesn't matter?
Well, everything matters.
Or the usage we've seen actually and have heard reported and seen in the game and stuff like that?
Well, it is hard to say because, you know, were they just giving a guy a chance in the preseason playing deep backup reserves? We don't know, but I thought Hallett played well in that role. I know Jalen McMurray is the third team nickel, so it's either Callaghan or Hallett who's receiving second team nickel. And the reason we talk like this in circles a little bit, by the way, is Titans don't, you know, teams don't want you, you know, even for reporters who are there, they've got strict rules about what they can and can't say based on pecking order and depth chart. So we try to be, you know, respect those rules and be very careful with that. I'll say this, Callaghan's about 6 foot, 205 pounds. Not typical nickel corner size. So for me, I think Hallett looked very comfortable in that role in the preseason. I think there's obviously a competition for that spot because there's no foregone conclusion of who backs up Marcus Harris during the regular season. One of those guys is making the 53-man roster, though, in my opinion, if not both of them in Callaghan and Hallett. I think if you guys aren't expecting that, you're in for a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, it's one to know, a name to watch for sure, and maybe someone to keep our eye on Sunday night when the Titans take on the Seahawks. So good shout out there, Justin. All right, that's three out of the four underrated big-time storylines that matter. We got one more, and it's going to be about the workload split in the running back room. I've done the research, Justin. I went through 8 years of Brian Daboll's history and how he's used his running backs from when he had a premier guy like Saquon Barkley to replacement-level guys like 30-year-old LeSean McCoy and 35-year-old Frank Gore. We're going to take a look at how those splits worked out in the past and project it to the future right after our second break. Welcome back. All right, final topic for today's episode, Justin. What do you think this workload split's going to be? Tony Pollard, Tajay Spears, we've heard Robert Saleh call them the bell cows. We've heard them referred to as a 1A, 1B situation. We've never seen Tajay Spears play a fully healthy 17-game season, so that obviously will impact the workload split, is how much time Tajay Spears can stay on the field. We've heard a lot of reports out of training camp about their usage in the passing game, and not just as checkdowns and dump-offs, which has been quite prolific, but even working like running wheel routes. I saw, who caught the touchdown pass? Was it Spears yesterday who caught a touchdown pass on a wheel route out of the backfield from Cam Ward with Cedric Gray in coverage, and it was a nice throw and a nice catch by Spears, but this is going to be part of the usage of them is in the receiving game as well. So we're going to take a look now based on Brian Daboll's history. I think if I had to like sum it up quickly before we dive into the numbers, we could probably project a roughly 2-to-1 split in carries where Pollard will probably see more, about 2-to-1 to Spears' workload, again, based on Brian Daboll's history. But that Spears will probably dominate the touches in the receiving game outside of like checkdowns where Pollard happens to be the relief valve for Cam Ward on like designed touches in the passing game. I think we're going to see Spears get the lead there. Now, Brian Daboll historically has given his running back room about 20 carries a game, and that average holds over 8 years. It doesn't fluctuate much from 18.1 carries a game for running backs to 22.4 over the course of a season, over the course of those 8 years. And I did cut off these numbers on November the 9th, 2025, because Brian Daboll was fired from New York on November 10th. So we don't need to judge the second half of the Giants last year. We're just going to look at, I guess, 7.5 years instead of eight. But as I put them on screen here, we'll go all the way back to 2018 when Brian Daboll took over as the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. His running backs were LeSean McCoy at 30 years old, Chris Ivory, if that name rings a bell, at 30 years old, and some RB3s in here that you may recognize, you may not, TJ Yeldon, Matt Breida, I think those are names you might recognize, Marcus Murphy, I don't recognize, and I don't even know who A. Williams is. It's not Antonio Williams, the rookie receiver for the Commanders. It's somebody else.
Alvin Williams, former point guard for the Toronto Raptors.
That's it. That's definitely who the RB3 was for the Bills in 2020. But no, we look at these splits here. The average split running back workload-wise for Brian Daboll's offenses for the 4 years he spent in Buffalo, where, again, he never had like a premier, highly paid, highly drafted running back. About 52% of those RB carries go to the RB1, 37% to the RB2, and 8% to the RB3, and then maybe some RB4 touches mixed in there. Injuries obviously impacting that as well. Look at the quarterback number, though. The percent of carries that the quarterbacks have received in Brian Daboll's offenses in Buffalo, obviously Josh Allen at quarterback, 22%, 23.9%, 26.3%, almost 30% of the rushes in the offense were Josh Allen over this time span. But we look at the running back workload split, and I think this is the best example of what we might see in Tennessee. It's not quite 2-1, but 52 to 37 was the long-term average. In 2018, the RB3 took 15% of carries. Maybe a little Nick Singleton mixed in action here. It wouldn't be surprising to me to see the RB3 get some run in this offense. If we look at the Giants more specifically here, the first 2 years in New York, I think we can almost throw out because Brian Daboll doesn't have a Saquon Barkley here. I don't think Tony Pollard is going to be your Saquon Barkley to Tajay Spears as Matt Breida. Like, that just doesn't track. And no. I think that's obvious to everyone who looks at it. 2024 feels like a pretty interesting split to me. Tyrone Tracy took 60% of the running back touches. Devin Singletary took 35%. And then last year, for the first 10 games of the season, and Cam Scataboo got hurt last year, so it's, you have to keep that in mind as well. But it was almost 2-1 Scataboo to Tracy. Devin Singletary, though, got 21% of the carries. It would be kind of interesting if they feel like they have a three-headed backfield, if they feel Nick Singleton is ready to take on that role. Cam Scataboo got less than 50% of the carries, 48%, 31% for Tracy, 21% for Singletary. If we put all those numbers together, Brian Daboll's averages come out to 59% of touches to the RB1, 30% to the RB2. That's where we get that approximately 2-1 number. I think the Titans offense, if you look at some projections around the league, projected for about 440 team rush attempts, which is more 50 more than they had as a team last year. I think, again, if we look at the quarterback workload here, it's always been above 22% is the lowest number you'll see on this chart. We got 23, 28, 29. Like, there's some big quarterback carry numbers here. I don't think we necessarily need to expect Cam Ward to take over 20% of the carries in this offense. I think Brian Daboll had different types of quarterbacks in these other stops. Josh Allen, obviously very mobile. Daniel Jones, very athletic and mobile. Jackson Dart, mobile as heck. Cam Ward is a different kind of mobile. He's kind of like more like a Patrick Mahomes kind of mobile, more like a Brock Purdy kind of mobile. He's not the same category of athlete in terms of as a runner as these other guys. So I would push that quarterback number down and say that there'll be more running back touches. But I think if we look at the history here, there's a chance this is a three-headed backfield if you think Nick Singleton can give you something this year. And I've been pretty out on Nick Singleton contributing this year, but after what he looked like in preseason and with the injury histories that we know Tajay Spears has, and even Tony Pollard the year that he really messed up his knee, I think there's a chance that we could see a three-headed backfield. And if last year's split comes to fruition, less than 50% for any of the running backs, 30% for the RB2, 20% for the RB3, would that be shocking to anybody, Justin?
I've got several notes here. Number one, I'm glad you made the quarterback note because there's no way he runs Cam Ward, right, you know, the way he ran Josh Allen and Daniel Jones. I'm more interested in talking touches than I am carries because sure. I do think Tajay Spears is going to dominate the workload in the passing game. He's just more dynamic, more explosive in space, and it just makes sense to utilize his skill set in that manner. And I don't have any, you know, fancy graphics or charts or evidence here the way you did. But in my mind, what I'm saying immediately is, like, you get your running backs 33 touches a game on average. I'd bet on 18 for Pollard, 15 for Spears. And so most of that for Pollard is obviously carries, whereas yeah. Spears, maybe it's 12 carries and 3 receptions or something along the lines. That's where my expectations are heading into the year. I don't, you know, Tony Pollard's what? He's 30. I think most people, let's be blunt, like, you pull people around the league, he's the 20th best starting running back in the NFL. The average person thinks 21st, 22nd. He's not, you know, he's getting older, as I just noted. He's not a dynamic, explosive bell cow. I don't think this is going to be a situation where they're interested in having him dominate touches. Now, everything goes out the window if Spears gets hurt again, and then Pollard's been the workhorse that he's been for them, because out of necessity, that's sort of what it's been these last couple of years, right? Where Spears misses five games, and that's a lot of time to be sidelined. But I really think, knocking on wood, and I'm starting to buy into the hype, like, I think this team is crossing fingers, toes, and every body part you can think of that Tajay Spears stays healthy, because they are so pumped about how he's looked in this system, how he's looked just period. He looks fast. He looks explosive. Jim Wyatt writes about him every observations article he's written dating back to OTAs. Like, he's been really, really stellar. It's a contract year for him. He knows that. If he's healthy, I think he's going to be heavily, heavily involved in this offense. And I don't think there's a scenario where he's healthy and Tony Pollard is seeing 60% of touches.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it, of touches. I think it's possible Pollard has a 2-to-1 carry share over Spears, but I think it's more than made up for in the passing game. If I put up this this Bills graphic again, I think 2019 is probably the best example that I would expect to see. Frank Gore, at 35 years old, had 166 carries. Devin Singletary had 151. That's only 15 more carries, but when you look at the targets involved as well, Frank Gore only had 16 targets that year. Devin Singletary had 41. Now, Brian Daboll's running back room has averaged over his tenure of the last 8 years, has averaged 5.6 targets a game. That's pretty high for a running back room. I think you could see Spears get 4 to 5 of those targets a game. Pollard maybe gets 1 or 2. I think the way Cam Ward plays will dictate this too. I think you could see the running back room get upwards of 7 or 8 targets a game based on the reports we've heard out of training camp and the willingness Ward has shown in training camp more than in the one preseason game he played to check the ball down to his running backs. He's talked about it at the podium saying, you know, if they're going to play off coverage, I'll give it to Pollard or Spears and make them come tackle them. We saw Spears wide open leaking out of the backfield for a possible check down on the play on Thursday night where Ward took the terrible intentional grounding penalty, trying to make a play that we've seen him make before. I think everyone remembers him stiff-arming Grant Delpit to the turf or shaking off Will Anderson before he found Alec Iamanner deep down the field over the middle. But in that instance, I'd rather see Ward just dump that off to Spears. The first pass of his career, if you remember, against the Denver Broncos, was a little check down to Spears that went for like 15 yards. To Pollard that went for 15 yards. So I think we could see both these guys involved in the pass game, especially if Pollard gets more early down work. That could lead to more targets for him. But I think when we talk about screens, using these guys on wheel routes or angle routes or Texas routes out of the backfield, that is probably going to be Tajay Spears' job. Tony Pollard was also this guy to Ezekiel Elliott. Tony Pollard was the Spears to Ezekiel Elliott in Dallas a long time ago and had like a 50-something yard touchdown catch and like was making plays out of the backfield as a receiver too. So I think they can both be interchanged, versatile. Like, they have the versatility to both do both. But I do think you're going to see Pollard in a more early down between the tackles role. You're going to see Spears as the third down passing down back, 2-minute drive situation back. And I think that's going to lead to a lot of targets to where I could see, actually, because of the targets, I could see Spears out touching Pollard this year. I think on the goal line, you're going to see Pollard get the majority of the work, though, where he's been effective. I mean, 5 touchdowns each of the last 2 years on the worst offense in football that wasn't giving him a lot of goal line opportunities. He converts those at a pretty high rate, converted one on Thursday night in the preseason. So I think that's what I'm expecting to see from like a fantasy football perspective. Is there one you'd rather have? I think I'd rather have Tajay Spears because he's cheaper in drafts. And I think the upside is more, even with the accepted much higher risk of not having him for 6 weeks or something because of an injury that could happen. I think it's worth it taking on that risk because you can get him almost for free towards the end of your drafts.
PPR format certainly helps too, right?
For sure.
Going with Spears.
Yeah.
Quickly on Nick Singleton, because he talked about the RB3 and his involvement. For me, never say never, because I think he's very talented and I think he occasionally looked good in that preseason game against the 49ers, where he had, 8 carries for 31 yards, about 4 yards per carry, just a hair under. Not to throw a wet blanket on it, not to be cliche, but I keep thinking about the rep where he got blown up in pass pro.
Yeah.
When you talk to any coach in the NFL, offensive coordinator, running back coach, whatever, maybe it sounds like coach speak, but you ask about their trust level in a rookie running back, pass pro, pass pro, pass pro. The first thing they're going to say, he's probably got to work on that before they can seriously trust putting him on the field in a regular season game. So for me, I think he's probably still a whiles away from really joining Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears in any sort of rotation, but he's talented. Anything can happen. And if Tajay Spears, again, gets hurt, you know, this conversation is totally different. It goes out the window. But yeah. Really excited about Spears and just, again, crossing every body part I have that he stays healthy.
What are the Giants doing? The Giants just signed Najee Harris?
I did.
They don't
see
have
that.
Enough yeah. running backs and Cam Scataboo and Tyrone Tracy and Devin Singletary, who had a 40-yard catch and run on a screen on 3rd and 27, I think, in the preseason, their preseason game over the weekend. Like, you don't have enough running backs? What's going on? I'm avoiding the Giants running back room in from a fantasy football standpoint. This, like, I don't want any part of any of those guys, but whatever. Yeah, so this is how I think the Titans running back workload shakes out. I agree with you on Singleton. I think pass pro is going to be a big deal. I think if it's early down stuff or even potentially short yardage stuff, maybe they look at Singleton. I mean, one of the things I thought he did best in that first preseason outing was fall forward after contact. Yeah. Get that X, get make
small.
A one.
Yeah.
He's not small. He looked huge, actually, I thought, running. He was like a little Derrick Henry light back there a little bit in terms of the size and imposing nature of his build. Here we go talking about the veins again, Justin. But I mean, the idea that he could take what looks like a 1 or 2 yard gain and turn it into a 3 or 4 yard gain with his ability to fall forward and push through contact, see if that holds against starting level players versus the 49ers backup level players that he was playing against. But yeah, I mean, I could see him in a short yardage role like that. I could see him just spelling these guys at points in a drive when he's not asked to stay in and pass protect. But does that tip your hand too much? Maybe so, and maybe they avoid using him that way as a rookie and just let him learn the mental side of pass protection as his rookie season goes on and then deploy him more heavily next year. But yeah, I think that covers it. 4 big storylines that are underrated at Titans training camp. Did you have one final point you want to make or you want to close us out?
That's going to do it. Lots of interesting topics on today's show as the Titans prepare for a open training camp practice tomorrow on Wednesday. Graver and I haven't discussed it, but that usually means Music City Audible will be live after practice to talk about all the updates coming out of training camp. We'll be live tomorrow, Wednesday, and then, of course, Friday, they've got the joint practice with the Seahawks. Sunday, preseason game, week 2 with the same Seahawks. Big week ahead for the Titans. We'll be back tomorrow, live on the Music City Audible after Wednesday's open training camp practice. I know you'll be here. Until then, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.